Hi, Leah.
Hey,
Welcome to Emory
Megan.
Podcast.
I'm so excited to be here. What an honor.
Thank you. I'm so excited to have you here too. And already the conversation that I feel like we're about to dip into is going to be so helpful, I think, for the Emory audience because you bring a perspective that I can't bring because I only have my perspective. So I'm really excited to talk to you about your experiences solo poly. I also appreciate that we got a chance to meet up in person in Chicago when I was there over the summer. That I love it when my Amory digital world collides and creates my 3D world. So thank you. So I will have already introduced you as the founder and creator of the Esther Perel discussion group, but I'd actually love to start our conversation there because that is, I think, how you and I met. First, would you please share a little bit about how you got started creating the Esther Perel discussion group?
Definitely. And actually, it goes a step back from there. So, what happened is I had an experience in early 2020 that introduced me to the idea of polyamory. Before that, it wasn't really on my radar at all. And I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, Hayden, who knew of you. And as I was talking about this, he brought your name up. And this was early on in my poly journey. And so I checked out the Amory podcast, and I'm so grateful that it was one of the very first poly podcasts that I listened to because it's so deep, which is totally my style. And it really kind of drew me even more towards poly because of the way you and Kyle and Marty practice. But beyond that, for the
Oh,
past
can I
five.
just stop and say I had totally forgotten about that? Thank you for bringing that up. I mean, it's such a small world, and that is so sweet. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Leah.
So great to share it. And then outside of that, about 5 years ago, I started a group on Facebook called the Esther Perel Discussion Group. I created it because I had been ghosted in a really painful way. It was a several month connection that I had been exploring that for me felt very, I felt very like seen. I felt very authentic. I felt very unmasked and also had big feelings for this person, which is like very rare for me. And then he ghosted. And several days later, I was at an event called Lewis Howes Summit of Greatness. Lewis Howes is a
Oh, that's
well-known
fantastic.
podcaster. Miraculously, one of the guests there was Esther Perel, who I was aware of and was always like very impressed by. But she closed her talk with the line, "In dating and relationships, we're often picked for a role that we didn't audition for." And what I realized in that moment is I had been auditioned for a role in his life that I was not aware of or interested in. And I was probably auditioning him for a role that he was not interested or ready for. And so I was so struck by those words and just her in general, and felt such a desire to talk about her topics and this talk that she gave in particular. And I have a lot of intellectual, smart friends, but I do feel like talking about relationships is just a very acquired taste.
I think you and I both share an affinity for it. So I so appreciate it.
Definitely. So on a whim, I started a group called Esther Perel Discussion Group. Really not thinking of it. Thought maybe like me and a handful of people would join, and then it would just like disappear into the internet. But 5 years later, we're approximately 15,000 members from across the globe, super intellectual, curious, engaged, vulnerable community. We talk about topics from dating to desire and sex to gender roles to infidelity.
I
It's
love your
just.
discussion group because I feel like I'm a member of a couple of different discussion groups, and I feel like the ones that are just really poly specific, polyamory specific, it tends to get really narrow in discussion. And what I really like about what you've cultivated and the people that have been attracted and joined and converse on this platform is that it's really all over the place. There's people in all different relationship structures, engaging with each other, asking each other questions. And to me, it's really the best of all worlds, because it really is this learning platform that you've created. And you've, you know, you're so engaged in it, and you've interviewed so many incredible people. I know that you finally got a chance to interview Esther herself. How did that feel when you got to interview her on the discussion group that you randomly created on a whim?
Oh my gosh, it's so funny you bring that up, because around that time was the time that I was first learning about and exploring poly. And the night before, I had a very intense moment within that initial exploration. And I like barely slept at all, and then went into this interview with Esther the next day. And I actually ended up talking about the experience with Esther. I think Esther comes much more from like a couple-centric poly perspective, because she is a couples therapist. So most of the people she works with are couples who started out as monogamous and then opened up. So I think she was bringing kind of more of like a hierarchical perspective to poly. It was cool to be able to share that with her, for sure.
Definitely. Oh, it's funny how the universe works. Having experiences and having probably had an experience that she hasn't had or hasn't worked through, because you have been practicing solo poly, which I want to dig into. I also want to do a side note. I think I've been pronouncing her name wrong the entire time. I've been saying Esther, like Esther Perel, but is it Esther Perel?
Yes. So she's Belgian, and I think that's the Belgian pronunciation. I know that she's also Jewish, and maybe it's more the Jewish pronunciation.
Fantastic. Well, I stand corrected, and I so appreciate it. So thank you. I'm sure I'll put some links. If anybody doesn't know Esther Perel, please go check her out. I'll put some links in the show notes. You can recommend maybe a handful of good talks or resources that you find of hers.
So for anyone who's not familiar, she actually did a film called Monogamish with Dan Savage and Chris Ryan about 5 years ago. And the filmmaker, the director, did a really interesting interview with her. That I've pulled out some quotes from. I'll share that link so you can put it in the show notes.
Perfect. And I'll make sure I put a link to your discussion group. Oh, I'd never heard of it. I'm curious to watch that. Monogamish. I know that Dan Savage coined that term, and I'm so thankful for it. Now he's got his own experiences in the realm of ethical non-monogamy as well. Yeah. Ooh, now can I turn onto you and your experiences? You've kind of seeded a couple ideas here, but I would love to jump into your experience in relating, and especially in the realm of ethical non-monogamy.
Definitely. And I'll just preface by saying, I think oftentimes people fall into polyamory kind of unexpectedly. It might be that a partner brings it up to them. It might be that they meet someone that, you know, sparks the idea of what's possible. What's interesting for me is, you know, I've been curating and leading this group for the past 5 years, and literally nonstop all day long, I'm learning about relational topics. We're discussing them. We're unpacking them. I'm listening to resources to help inform the discussion. Very much a relationship and psychology junkie. And so that was kind of what I brought into my poly experience. So while I was super new to it, I had relational skills that poly people often cultivate either with a therapist or in some type of support group. So it was this weird juxtaposition of being like brand new to this thing while also having more like advanced level skills that I was bringing to it. And I share that because I think that's kind of one of the tensions that I'm navigating now. Let's see. So I stumbled into it. I was on a dating app and connected with a guy whose profile I really liked. His main picture was just him, a guy. I'm not a very visual person. I'm much more of like a words person. So I like read his profile, was really digging it. We matched. And then after we matched, I looked at the rest of his profile, and it was all pictures of him and his girlfriend. And again, I don't even think I knew what polyamory was at the time. Maybe I was aware of it, but like it had never crossed my mind to explore it personally. Because I really like, I like to go deep. I like, I'm a very loyal, committed person. And so when I think about my poly why I'm drawn to it, it's much less the novelty and the variety of experiences. It's more around the idea of like the freedom and autonomy of the individual within the relationship. So I'm not someone who struggles with like exclusivity, or I haven't had really any experiences with infidelity or cheating, either myself or being on the receiving end of it. For me, the poly why is much more around, the autonomy of the individual within the relationship and not needing one person to meet all of our needs. Getting different needs met from different people is also really attractive and bringing energy.
So it's the philosophical, the ideal,
the philosophical kind of is
realm.
Mm-hmm. It's very much. So anyway, going back to this kind of launching pad experience. So I let the guy know, I said, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that you're here looking for a threesome. I identify as heterosexual, not interested in exploring that at the time. And basically he's like, listen, we seem to have a lot of shared interests. Let's just meet up. We'll have a picnic. I'll bring my partner. Like worst case scenario, it'll be a picnic on a nice day in Chicago. So I agree. And we had a great time. We did lawn games. We had, some delicious snacks and the three of us got along well. And afterwards, like as I was leaving the park, he's like, we so enjoyed meeting you. We'd love to meet up again. And during this time, I'm having this like pit in my stomach because I just knew that I was not bisexual and it wasn't an area that I was interested in exploring. And I'm like, how is this going to work? When the two of them met, she was mono, he was poly. I think they're like, well, let's see what happens. Then they kind of were exclusive for a short time period. And I was their very first experience opening up. So I keep reiterating, I'm heterosexual. I don't even identify as poly. Like, what are we doing? And they're kind of like, let's explore. We have a second quote unquote date, the three of us. And at the end, his girlfriend said, I would be comfortable with you two having a solo date together. So, and in the meantime, I'm a very like, I love connecting through like words and questions and curiosity and language. And so he and I are like texting quite a bit and really like deepening intimacy pretty fast. And so on our solo date by then, we were like very revved up for each other. We end up sharing a sexual experience in the park. And apparently they hadn't discussed that as a possibility. I think in the girlfriend's mind, this was just a first date. We were going out to dinner. That was it. She got very triggered by our physical activity together. And
because I just want to correct, they hadn't talked about that.
They had not.
Is that what you said? They had not. Okay.
Had not. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And this, I want to reiterate that even in open relationships, it is possible to cross boundaries. It is possible to have these, like that line. It's not just like, ta-da, open. Okay, now nothing's considered, off limits. It's just like to reiterate again around conversations and why and, where boundaries get crossed and why. And yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Please continue.
So, and I think this is like one of the most challenging things that I continue to experience in my solo poly journey is we have this elevated, deeply connected, intimate experience together. And so we leave like 10 out of 10. And then that 10 out of 10 experience is triggering for the primary partnership. And so what ended up happening is the next day, I got a phone call from the person and they said, hey, my girlfriend is feeling really triggered. Can we take a 2-week pause on any communication or contact while we work through this together? And what I said to him is, communication is really important for me during conflict. I'm open to pausing on like the dates and the physical intimacy. I'm not open to just like not talking for 2 weeks and then picking things back up once you guys have processed what you're feeling. And then he basically said, I understand where you're coming from. I can't do that. And I basically said, okay, I'm just not comfortable with that. And he said, we basically parted ways. And then he reached back out and I said, like, this is not like a nourishing dynamic for me to explore. And that's kind of what I've continued to experience in different forms throughout the, you know, 2.5 years that I've continued to explore solo poly. And I will add, I'm very like specifically drawn to solo poly because while I love like deep intimacy, I have a lot of passions that require quite a bit of like dedicated time. And so I like the idea of living alone. I have my own place, which I really enjoy. I have lots of time to pursue my passions. I don't dream of like having a family with someone or entangling finances with them, or even like sharing a domestic partnership. What I love is like the intimacy. And so I like the idea of like having dedicated special time for that with, you know, one or several people that I really enjoy spending time with. And so I think that's kind of the tension that I'm experiencing is I'm specifically drawn to the solo poly, but there are some norms because we live in a heteronormative society, even within polyamory, there's an elevation of like, you know, the primary couple or the primary partnership. And what I keep running into is either like in the case of the example I just shared, the person was not willing to simultaneously show care and consideration to my needs and his partner's needs, or they want to, but don't have the hinge relational skills to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, you just brought up so much. And I'm so glad that you're bringing this perspective because you, again, you bring a perspective that I don't have that, you know, I have the couple perspective and opening up the relationship and not the one coming into it. Hearing you talk, actually, I'm reminded of what Kyle and I went through in the beginning of our relationship because we did have to do a stop and repair also. And I hadn't told him what that was. In fact, Marty and I had just kind of created it to say, hey, if we ever need to, if one of us is ever freaking out, we like stop everything. And unfortunately, I did to Kyle what that man did to you, which was like, okay, Marty's, you know, going through this rough moment. Like I gotta stop. It's a stop and repair. And I need to stop talking to you for the weekend. We just did it for the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I remember that being really uncomfortable, but also not having the skills to navigate it and also not realizing the impact on Kyle. And I think it's still something, I mean, we talked the other day and it came up again, you know, it's like, oh yeah, that did cause harm. You know, it did cause harm. And you know, looking back on it, I would do things totally different. You know, I would have talked about that beforehand. I would have worked better at trying to talk to both of them at the same time, so neither of them felt like I was shutting out or creating priority. I do think in your situation, what I hear is that there wasn't, whoever this unnamed person is, person X, set you up for failure, actually, because if that wasn't something that they had particularly talked about and cleared with their partner, they were doing something that was beyond the scope or what was quote unquote allowed or expected in that interaction, you know. And even in polyamory, I think so many people misunderstand that there still can be this the feeling of betrayal, the feeling of cheating, you know. And it's, and sometimes I hear that people get that used against them if they're, you know, I heard of another friend where the metamor was like, well, I can come in and do anything because you're open, right? you know? And it's not that. It's like, no, we're human beings and we still make agreements and some things cross a line, and this is called boundaries. It's not that I'm open and everything goes all the time, you know? If we kind of see ourselves more as cellular, like cells have permeable membranes, semi-permeable membranes. So we're the ones as human beings that make up, you know, what's okay, what's not okay. And I just feel bad that that was your first experience and you kind of weren't set up for success. Now, had that been something that, you know, was cleared, like, hey, we could be sexual and that's okay, and the partner still had triggered, you know, that can still happen too, where the partner can still be triggered, but then it's like something was explicitly agreed to, and then there's the emotional part that comes, because nobody can ever tell exactly how they're going to react, right? You can say like, I'm totally okay, go have sex, it's fine, and then your partner has sex and you're like, I'm not fine, hold on, time out, this is more than I thought I had to deal with. And so yes, I totally get it on that. Please.
Can I call out two things that I think might be helpful for the Avery listeners? So the first is, the dynamic I entered into already had a major power dynamic, right? Because the guy identifies as poly and is trying to get his partner, who does not identify as poly, to be open to it and explore it. And so she's kind of in a one-up position, because this is uncomfortable, this is new, he's trying to get her to open up to it. And so because he was in that one down position in that specific dynamic, I think it caused him to really walk on tiptoes around her feelings and her needs, and that it kind of at my expense, if that makes sense.
Totally. So thank you for bringing up the power dynamics. That's so important to understand, and it's so little talked about.
And then an additional power dynamic that isn't really talked about is, you know, you mentioned agreements, and I've already shared, I'm like a psychology and relationship junkie. The idea of sitting down and having a conversation about agreements is like really, really attractive and appealing to me. But oftentimes when you're solo poly, there's kind of this tacit understanding that the couple is entitled to make and have agreements. And then the solo poly person, they're on the table, and the solo poly person can accept them or walk away. It's pretty rare that the solo poly person has any say in agreements or gets to make agreements with one of the primary partners that they're involved with as well.
I so agree. And it's funny because it's like, I am on the couple side, and I see the impact on both Marty's partner and on Kyle. When Marty and I, if we make a decision, if we have something that we're discussing, and if we're not really conscious of involving our partners. And I think with long-standing relationships now, we've gotten better at considering, but honestly, I'm still not great. Like, I'm still trying to deal with that dynamic, because there are kids involved, there are finances involved, there's like so many other entanglements involved in my relationship with Marty that I don't have with Kyle. And because Kyle is not dating anyone long-term and committed the same way, it does leave him to be a bit more flexible, but I don't want that to be at his expense, you know? Right. So it's really like, I understand all this in my head, and it's so good to hear from you, because I'm like, what could I do? You know, what could I, knowing that where my heart is and what I want, and what I want for all of the people involved in my polycule and beyond. So what from your side have you seen, and can you think of anything that would be ideal? Like, oh, if someone would have asked me this, or if I could sit down, or, you know, tell me what exists in your head as far as what could be done to level out really the power dynamics there, if everyone's willing.
Yeah. I think one thing that's maybe helpful to call out is, I completely understand that when you've been with someone for longer, you're going to have a different level of investment in making sure that they're comfortable, that their needs are being met, that if they're feeling triggered, that is kind of worked through, co-regulated together. Totally get that. I also will acknowledge that while some people who are solo poly might have a desire for equal time, you know, equal, equal time, equal number of, you know, date nights, equal amount of sex, equal amount of whatever it might be. That is not what I'm interested in. What would be meaningful is equal amount of consideration of like my feelings and needs just as a human being. Mm-hmm. And I think what's challenging for me is it's something that comes naturally to me in my life. I have a lot of friends and a lot of relationships that I invest in and cultivate. You know, I don't have kids. That's a very intentional decision because I care a lot about my relationships and I want to continue to nurture them. So I think it, you know, it's something that I do with my friends, with my family, with the relationships that matter to me. Just that care and consideration. And so I think that's like the main thing that would be really meaningful for me is, let's say, you know, when we originally meet and kind of kick off the relationship, having a conversation about like, what are you looking to experience in a romantic connection? Is it a lot of quality time? Is it sexual novelty? Is it exploring a kink power dynamic? Is it emotional intimacy? Is it like deepening relationship skills for the goal of like personal growth? Having that conversation, having someone like be curious and care about those things and design a relationship agreement where we're investing in our shared things and each other's personal things together. That would really be, that would be a game changer for me.
That would be amazing. Have you found that? Are those the type of conversations that you've been able to engage in, or do you find that that's still lacking?
So I would say that I have a bunch of different poly communities that I'm a part of. I'm super active in the Chicago polyamory community. I do a lot of like event organizing and hosting for them. So I'm constantly meeting people. I'm involved with Emma and Finn's Normalizing Non-Monogamy community, which is great. Love the work they're doing for anyone who's not familiar with them. And several other like smaller poly groups that I'm a part of. And so I feel like, and then of course, like the dating apps that I'm on. So I feel like I come across a lot of people who are looking to connect. Normally what I experience is people who are in some type of committed relationship that's open or poly, and they're looking for like fun and novelty and a bit of escapism from that partnership with a secondary partner. A lot of don't ask, don't tell situations where I can't get, you know, consent from all of the people who might be impacted, definitely like veto power. So for example, we're kind of new to this, we're trying, you know, we could pull the plug at any time. People who are, I'm trying to think of some of the situations that I've encountered.
Well, you just brought up something, you know, when you're new, you relate to this process really differently. Have you noticed that as people have gotten experience in the process of having more than one relationship at a time? And have you found that they're more able to have those conversations? Is it really a matter of experience level? Because I kind of think that we are relationally, I don't know what the word is. We just haven't built that muscle, right? Around relationships. And I think that for me, this whole process of opening up the relationship and now having two men that I love and being able to like build all these skills, I feel like I can't even compare it to where I was 5 years ago. I didn't have, you know, the majority of the skills that I have now. And I'm so grateful for this. So I'm wondering, is it just that there's kind of a sliding scale of when you're first getting in and what you need and how you relate to it, or, you know, you can get to a point where you're like, okay, sweet. I know myself. I know how I would like to relate. And it's really easy to have these conversations.
Yeah. I feel like more what I'm encountering is just very different poly-wise or ethically non-monogamous-wise, where they're not looking to have additional partners, where they're like kind of looking in the mirror better understanding the stuff that's coming up for them in polydynamics, processing it, learning skills to better navigate it. I think it's really mainly people who are invested in their primary partnership, see the amount of processing that needs to happen with that primary partner in order to do poly as like 100% their tank is full. And so anything outside of that would just be like fun and easy breezy experiences. Mm. And then if they get challenging where they need to do that type of work with additional partners, it's like there's not kind of space for that. I'm just not finding people where the poly why is more around like growth and deepening self-awareness and, you know, like, better understanding attachment theory.
But exactly. Oh my God. Attachment theory. We can go there too. Then we must be a little rare. I only have my experience. It's really hard. That's why I like to talk to as many people as I can about their experiences. But I feel like for Marty and I and Kyle and I and Marty and his partner, the theme around growth and understanding ourselves is huge. I mean, I know how much work I put in. I know how much work Marty puts in, and I know how much work Kyle puts in. I know how much work Marty's partner puts in, and it's a lot. Marty and I were joking. He's been off the podcast for a little while, but I think he's going to come back, and the title of his podcast will be kind of funny because it just, you know, polyamory takes a lot of work, and to find people that are on that, it's more like it's the way that you're relating to yourself, right? Like, this is a learning path. And maybe I've just had that perspective the whole time. Like, relationships are learning vehicles. This is a way for me to understand, you know, myself and the world, and not hopefully at anyone's expense, but like through together. And I do hope that more people will see this. You know, I think it's about creating the narrative. You know, we're not born with that narrative. If anything, dating apps have made relationships consumable. And it's like, oh, you didn't work out well. Great. On to the next one. Could we consume relationships? And I think what I'd like to bring, and hopefully through conversations like this with you, is that we are, you know, there is another way to look at relating. And that way can be through this, you know, understanding about ourselves and just a really different way than the consumable way that I think we've just gotten used to. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd be so curious to poll your Patreon community. I imagine just because of the way you guys show up, a lot of the people that are drawn to you and attracted to you are probably much more growth oriented. But I had such a chuckle because there was a post recently, not in my group, in one of just the general poly groups, where someone who has been engaged with a female partner, that person started to catch feelings for the guy who was in a primary partnership, and they have a rule around no feelings. And it wasn't clear whether that rule was communicated on the front end. But that's another thing that I've come across, like this idea, like I would like, a dating profile where it's like, I'm interested in, you know, casual, no strings attached. Like, we don't really do feelings. I'm like, that's like the opposite of what I'm looking for. Like, I'm looking to feel things with people. So I would say, though, that like growth tends to be not what most people come to poly for.
Mm-hmm. They don't come for that. And I think the way that it's successful and the people that I've seen be successful in multiple, you know, ethical non-monogamous relationships is taking that on. Really, because the people that I feel like, and this isn't all across the board, I don't want to generalize, but I think that the people that aren't ready for that work or don't want it, and it's legit to say like, hey, I just don't want this. This isn't something that I want. They end up getting divorced, well, you know, if it's a couple, or they find that it just doesn't work. And I find that the people that are really, really managing long-term polyamorous relationships, I've found the common thread is like, all right, people are ready to work. That's not to say that people can't work in monogamous relationships. I think that that takes a whole lot of work as well. It's different work. Some of it overlaps, but I mean, maybe the thread is relating, you know, relating in a healthy way to ourselves or others takes work. Maybe that's the thread.
Yeah. I'll also fully own there's a difference between like doing the work and having personal growth work be one of your highest personality needs, like it is for me. So I definitely I don't want to give people the impression that, like, you know, I think that there's, you know, a whole host of people who aren't doing the work. I think a lot of people who are exploring ethical non-monogamy and open relationships and poly tend to dive right in, have experiences, and then look for support to navigate those experiences.
Agreed. Agreed.
Whereas I am like insatiable when it comes to learning about relational skills and dynamics. And I'm a part of several different communities where I'm just like constantly all day, every day, just trying to better understand what happens when we experience connection, how people's responses can be vastly different, attachment theory, you know, boundaries, navigating conflict, all the topics. And so
that's why I think it's fascinating to talk to you because of that, you know, because you have put so much time and effort and you are really interested in it. I'm wondering about any other themes that you've seen, because you get to interact with so many people at this very intimate level. I'm wondering if you have any theories that at this point, no, it's not your full-time job too. I know I'm cognizant that you actually have another different full-time job, and this is definitely an area of interest. So I don't know how you do it. It's like hats off to you. But I'm wondering if you've started to come up with your own theories, not only about yourself and understanding yourself, but really about people and any patterns that you've seen around what it is like being human and relating. That's a big question, I know, but I just wanted to have it broad enough so you could bring up anything that you've noticed.
I think one of the biggest things that comes to mind is how, and this comes up for sure in poly relationships and open relationships, where we design them intentionally to prevent conflict. And that's like a lot of the rules that people who are brand new to poly create. Whereas really it's having the experiences and being able to work through them with a partner, both individually and as a unit, that deepen the relationship and make us more interested in and committed to each other. And so that's one thing that I've observed both in monogamous relationships and all the situations that come up in our group, how fearful people are of sharing their truth and having the conversations, not having the skills to navigate a conflict conversation without triggering each other's deepest wounds. And then it just gets that much more heightened within a poly dynamic because there's just more activity and more people involved.
Wow. That's a really beautiful observation. And I can totally understand and relate that. Yeah, we construct our world, really, not even just our relationships. We're so fearful of conflict.
Yeah.
And that's our orientation. And the way that I have come to understand myself in the world is I always ask myself, how am I relating to this? You know, how am I relating to my feelings? How am I relating to another person? How am I relating to my future? And I think how am I relating to conflict is huge. That's one lesson that being married to Marty all these years is I've reformed and reformatted my relationship to conflict because he is not afraid of conflict. At conflict, he will step into it. And I think that that's one thing I've come to appreciate about him and about us and about now how I see things. I'm still a little conflict averse, but I've shifted it to, it's not a bad thing. You know, like you said, it can actually bring us closer. And how many days, weeks, years can go by in a relationship because one person or both are hiding how they truly feel or who they maybe might know themselves to be and just afraid of that. I think it's just even our orientation towards fear, right? Mm. If there is conflict, we're afraid of conflict. We're actually afraid of our fear. So then we do anything to avoid feeling that fear. And that's one thing I heard on a Tim Ferriss podcast, which is what's the one feeling is there one feeling that you can't sit with in your body? And whatever we can't sit with in our body, that ends up running us. So I've come really just paid a lot of attention to what these feelings are and how I feel them in my body. And yeah, I wonder how would we go about shifting that relationship on a massive level? Any other thoughts?
There are definitely some people that I've interviewed in the Esther Perel discussion group, because we usually do a handful of Facebook Lives a month. We've done one with you, with all kinds of people.
Honored to have been a guest. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a guy, Mike Thomas, who is phenomenal. I met him. We hosted a live event earlier this year, and he was one of our presenters. And they did a session on attachment theory and essentially trauma-informed attachment theory. And he just has a wealth of knowledge. And he did a session with us on, it was called self-regulation and co-regulation. And at about 40 minutes in, he provided a really good template for navigating through a conflict situation or a trigger. And I'll see if I can remember it correctly off the top of my head. It's grounded in nonviolent communication. Mm. And it's starting with sharing what you observed. So I noticed you talking with the woman at the swingers party, we'll say. And then I think it was observed. And then in that moment, I felt scared. I felt upset and a little jealous. So it's observation, feeling, and then it's need without demands. So in that moment, what I needed was for you to just look over at me and, you know, give me a wink or something, or after talking, come over to me and, you know, give me a kiss on the cheek. And then I think the last one is the request, where you say, like, in the future, could you, and you get very specific when you're at the swinger party and after you have like an intimate moment with someone, could you come over and just let me know that you're, you know, you're still there with me. So, so that's a good way to communicate without like blaming or getting defensive. Yeah.
I was just going to say all the things that come up, blame, judgment. It's funny because it's that observation piece. I think that that's the hardest. Kyle read the book. I haven't read it yet, but it's on my reading list of nonviolent communication. Yeah. I think the author is Marshall Rosenberg, maybe. Yeah. I can put a link there. Because so often we all jump towards judgment and we don't even realize it's a judgment. So that first piece of observation and then understanding our own feelings. Oh my gosh. That is like, again, I'm hopeful that all of this, as we talk about this more and as this becomes more maybe mainstream and just general understanding of our humanity, it could get a little easier, but thank you for bringing that back up. And what massive, massive skills. You know, think about something that could blow up in an argument, that a fight that could last days or even end a relationship. If we take ownership for what's happening in the process and our needs and that and our feelings, and actually make requests of our partners instead of blaming them for not meeting our needs that they didn't know that we had. I was really good at that. I'm working on it. I've shifted.
Esther Perel has this great quote: behind every criticism is a veiled wish. Why? Because it's a lot less vulnerable to ask for something when someone has the power to not give it to us. And it's so true. Like, so often when there is criticism in a relationship, it's simply an unmet need that we don't know how to ask for, or we feel scared to ask for, because it's really vulnerable. Gosh.
It really is. And I'm seeing that actually in my kids, and I'm thankful for this work. I'm thankful for knowing what I know. And I'm thankful, honestly, for the practice to be able to see my kids get really upset and their anger, you know, they're angry and they start lashing out. And it's, instead of blaming them for being angry, you know, I really approach it as, wow, I see you're angry. What is it that's happening? You know, how do you feel right now? Like, what? And then really getting, especially my son, getting him to the point where he can understand that he's hurt. And it's like, oh, they hate me. It's like, oh, they don't, why would you say that they hate you? You know, what's happening? What is it that they're doing? You know, and walking him through this process of the observation and what is it that he needs? I mean, these are skills, I think, as adults, if we start to learn them and master them, well, then we can work with our kids on it. And I can see like the generational change that can happen when we understand our needs. It's not how I grew up.
Oh, 100%. And the self-awareness is such a huge piece of it, because I think if we don't understand the place that we're coming from, and generally it links back to either like childhood experiences or kind of like big challenging experiences we've had in our teenage years or in our adulthood. So an example would be around my 12th, 13th birthday, my mom suddenly became very bipolar. And I kind of instantly became a parentified child, meaning I became like my own mom, but also her mom. Wow. And yeah. And one of the things, there were a lot of beautiful things, like skills that I got out of that experience that I love about myself. But one of the stories that came up was like, I'm not allowed to have needs because my mom's needs are massive and there's not space for both of us to have them. And so what I realized in my mid-20s is I really diminished my needs in relationships because I had a story that I couldn't have them. And so it's so great to have that knowledge now when I enter in relationships, because I can be looking out for it and being like, Leah, are you diminishing your needs as a way to keep the connection? Are you expressing them? Are you allowing other people to meet them, et cetera? And this is the type of self-awareness that I think makes relationships super rich, because when someone doesn't have the self-awareness that they can share with their partner, it can be hard to navigate those moments because they don't know what they're experiencing in their body or why.
Yes. Oh my God. Even the idea of, you bring up so many good points. I wish I could ask you three different questions from here, but you bring up that idea of what's happening in the body and why. I just learned the word interoception, I-N-T-E-R-O-ception, C-E-P-T-I-O-N, interoception. And it is that process of understanding the signals from the inside, right? And it's so funny that I could be 42 and, you know, this word, I don't know, somebody invented it a couple decades ago, but now, you know, now it has meaning. Now it's like, God, that's the work. Like, that's the work I've been doing and trying to work with people in the self-love program and really understanding. And even now teaching at my kid's school, like there's all these feelings that are happening and we get all this sensory data that comes in from the inside. And then we have to translate that. And most of us get the education of gaslighting ourselves or saying like, well, this doesn't count. You know, I should ignore this, deny it. It's not right. Don't trust myself. So we not only don't get the skills to understand that sensory input, we are actively shutting it down, which is the opposite, right? So it's about opening those floodgates, having that opportunity and then being able to really interpret what's happening. So you could have a fast heartbeat and that could either mean that you're anxious or you're excited. So it's not only about the sensory data that's coming through, it's about the story that we make about that sensory data. I remember before I did public speaking, I would get so nervous and I related to that sensory data like it was bad, but somebody had me flip the story and say, no, your body's just getting ready. You're excited for it. Now you have more energy on stage. And I'm like, oh yeah. And that's a different way of relating to that sensory data. So for me, all of this stuff is just layered. It's so beautiful and so layered. And I'm curious for you. I feel like what I hear you say in your everything that you've explored, I mean, have you ever thought about going down this more full time or, you know, making this not just a hobby for you, but really, I just feel like you have so much value to add to this conversation. Where do you see yourself going? Just kind of continuing to use this personally, or is it bigger than that?
It's funny. I do get a lot of questions like, Leah, what do you see as like the future of the Esther Perel discussion group? Like, what's on your radar? I love having needs come to me. So for example, this retreat that we did, it was in honor of our 5-year anniversary. We were just coming out of a period of COVID and people feeling so isolated and disconnected. It wasn't part of like a 3-year plan or anything. It just was like, okay, this, we're ready for this to happen. Let's do it. So I'm kind of more, I guess, intuitive that way versus like a planner. And I like love exactly what we're doing now. We have a safe space. We had a question just yesterday evening where a woman was engaged to a guy. I think they had been together for 4 years. They were in their middle years. And she learned that he had been masturbating to pictures of her daughter, who was in her early 20s. And those are the types of questions that are brought to us because we do so much to create a safe space where there's no shaming, there's no judgment. We don't encourage black or white thinking. You know, like there's one way or another way. No, we really, all of our members really do their best to highlight the nuance in the situation. We don't tell people what to do, which you see in a lot of other groups. Rather, we share our own mm-hmm. experiences. We help direct people to resources or work that Esther has shared on the topic. So I think the long-term plan is continue to invest in the culture that allows for the community, continue to have the interviews with people. We have one coming up with, I'm so excited for this one, Dr. Shannon Curry, who was the forensic psychologist in the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial. She's fascinating. She's Gottman trained. So she's trained in the Gottman couples therapy method. So we have a conversation with her. And then the following week, we have a conversation with Todd Adams, who is the co-host on Zen Parenting Radio. We've been getting a lot of really interesting questions from men in the group. One specifically that comes to mind is there's a guy who was married for about 30 years. Now he's in his like later years, and he's trying to finally have the relationship that he wanted to have. And what he's coming into is that a lot of the women he's dating, because for so long, women's sexuality was not really their own. It was kind of the sexuality of the man or of the couple or the marriage, that women are coming in, you know, wanting her pleasure to be elevated. You know, consent is a big topic. And him feeling like there's not space for him to be sexually entitled as well, because then he's seen as like a bad guy who's part of patriarchy. So we'll be talking about that topic with Todd Adams. So I love having these conversations. That's like one of my favorite things. And I love having a career on the side. I like having it separate. It kind of makes it sacred and even more special in kind of an odd way.
Oh, I love that. I think that was helpful for me because I feel like I've put a lot of pressure on myself with Amory as far as the financials go. And I think, yeah, separating it out and having that as a, yeah, just to let this be the community that you want to create. And I love hearing that. I love what you've created with the Esther Perel group. I feel like you do cultivate that safe space. And I love the word nuance. Yeah. I think that that is what we're missing in society and at large. I think binary thinking really it only gets us so far, and it really is about, can we see all of the shades of gray in between? Can we allow for multiple perspectives? And I love that that's really the ethos of the group that you've created, and that says a lot about you. That says a lot about your values and how you've fostered the group, and you know, where you just mentioned the Amory audience and the people that I attract. I think it's the same thing with you. You know, you attract people that also have that ability to and desire to want to see life through multiple perspectives and be open and both contribute and receive. And I want to just keep supporting that. So
thank you, Megan.
I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. I want to maybe clarify in case people are not familiar with what I mean by nuance. It's holding space for competing or conflicting ideas at once. So an example would be in this post that I just talked about with this woman whose fiance has been masturbating to pictures of her daughter. There were people in the group who completely held space for this woman's devastation and pain, the betrayal in her relationship with him, the loss of the future that they, you know, were working on creating together, the fear for her daughter's physical safety. Mm-hmm. They were able to acknowledge and see that, while also bringing up how men are really conditioned to be wildly attracted to women in their early 20s and not say that the behavior is correct, but to help bring more understanding of why it could have happened. He likely has sexual trauma or past sexual abuse in his background that led to the actions. And so those are the types of perspectives on a thread that people can expect to see in our group. It's not just kind of saying the obvious thing and being supportive. It's also having that counter perspective that helps you hold your own boundaries while also being able to see the place the other person might be coming from. And that's very mm-hmm. much Esther's style. And we try to infuse that in our group ethos as well.
I really like that. Thank you. I wasn't quite sure what to do with that example that you brought up. I'm like, how do I feel about that? I need a minute to think about that.
I think we all can relate to people who've been victims of abuse and then carry out that abuse. Just like people have been in families where addiction and alcoholism and drug use was prevalent and they were on the receiving end of all the negative repercussions mm-hmm. of that, and then they go on to do it. I think that's a way that I can relate to, mm-hmm. hurt people type.
Exactly. That's idea. Exactly what goes through my head. Hurt people. And what we generally do, which isn't that helpful, is to blame, shame, judge, punish, instead of understand, work with, to support, to support a different behavior. So that takes the willingness, the compassion, the ability to withhold judgment and to understand, humanity at large. And that's still, I think, quite a big ask of most. But I'm glad that you're creating the space for it and allowing people really, to see discussion happen. There's so much learning that happens there. So I hope we've talked enough about the group that people are interested in. If they have a Facebook account, they can go on there and check it out and join the group and really experience the things that we've been talking about. I want to keep this discussion going with you. You brought up that retreat and that you did. Is that going to be an annual thing?
It's unclear at the moment. So what Megan is referring to is an event called Relate Fest that we did in March of this year.
Oh, yeah, it was more than a retreat. It was like a conference. It looked great.
We covered Tantra and kink and BDSM and open relationships. And we had a session on erotic eating. There's this amazing woman, Melisa Morris, who led us in a erotic eating experience. So we had all types of fun sessions. It's unclear, but we have other events posted in the Esther Perel group that people can take part in.
Awesome. Well, if you do that conference again, I will make sure to tell the Amory listeners about it. And I look forward just to continuing our conversation. I'm really glad that you have the interest that you have. And on a personal note, I do think that there are people out there, Leia, that are interested in intimate connection and emotional, partnership and support. And I will put it out there as good mojo for you to be able to connect with people that that have the same interest. On that note, how do people find you if they want to follow more of you? Obviously, they can join the Facebook group. Is there any other way for people to hear about you or connect with you?
Yeah, I definitely, I have a YouTube channel. I don't post all of our Facebook Live interviews on the YouTube channel, just for my professional reasons in my career outside of the Esther Perel discussion group. But we probably have, about 30 different interviews that we've done. We've done Dr. Wednesday Martin, who wrote the book Untrue. We've done Dr. Shefali Sabari, who a lot of people know as Oprah's parenting expert, but she also did a great book called Radical Awakening that was mainly geared towards women and self-awareness. Kasia Urbaniak, who was a former dominatrix, wrote a great book called Unbound. Dr. David Lay, who did a book on cuckolding. We've just interviewed so many luminous people. So you can check out the YouTube channel. I'll share the link. Those are, I would say, the two best places to catch me.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Leia, for your time. Is there anything else that you want to make sure the Amory listeners, any other final words of wisdom or any closing thoughts?
What is the closing message going to be? I think maybe the closing message is just being clear and transparent as you're entering into relationships, because, you know, like we started in dating and relationships, we're often picked for a role that we didn't audition for, and that can create a lot of unnecessary pain. So before diving in, taking time to get clear, you know, what is your poly why? What are you looking to experience through it? Is it novelty? Is it emotional depth with multiple different partners? Is it exploring BDSM and kink power dynamics? And then being able to be curious about the other person's why. What are they looking to experience in the romantic connection? There's a great relationship smorgasbord chart. I can link this up as well. That has a bunch of different areas that we can get needs met through relationships, whether it's like social or physical activity or financial stability, domestic partnership, physical intimacy. There are so many different areas that we can get needs met through relationships. So getting clear on your own and being curious about your partners. I think that might be my closing message.
That is perfect. Thank you so much. Thanks for your time. Thanks, Amory, listeners, for listening. And we'll say to be continued.
Thanks, Megan. Thanks, everyone.